Let me just say a word of what I plan to do as a way of introducing President Wolf was simply to do a quick synopsis. As you're aware, the Board of Curators approved the tuition policy for the university, and for us that was a 3% tuition for undergraduates, resident students, Missouri students, and then some special fees all went up. Special fees went up at the rate of inflation, with the exception of a few, four, I believe, and I don't have those top of my head. Business was one of them. Journalism was one. And we can fill that in if anybody needs it. It's not at the top of my head. And we had made an agreement a year ago with the board. We'd go halfway there. They'd make up the other half this time. So we did that. That explains, if you see those fees above 3%, that's where they are. One's in vet med, and I'm still missing one. So that's what we did. And, you know, let me say, we did not do it without some trepidation. We were concerned about separating the tuition rate of increase from out-of-state students, in-state students, the undergraduate level. But we did when we looked at the incredibly difficult revenue situation we've been put in as a university. Even with this 7.5 for out-of-state residents, out-of-state students, we face a $22 million gap in next year's budget that we're working already and been engaged in dialogue with some of you already on how to deal with that. That will be the top priority of what we're engaged in our future discussions with you, and we'll keep you fully informed on it. Most of you probably have seen Tim Rooney's presentation at this point, so you have a good sense of what that is and how we're looking at it. It's manageable. It's manageable with tremendous stress, as so many things we're facing right now are. We project 50-some job losses in the adjustment that occurs. We do not expect to decline in numbers of students or in our research awards. So that's the paradox that we're looking at today with, you know, saying, yes, we definitely are going to be losing jobs, but then if we're successful in everything we're trying to do, there may be some growth in jobs in other sectors. That's not new to the University of Missouri, but it makes it awkward in trying to interpret to the public sometimes what we're faced with here. We have an enormous job in front of us. The University of Missouri's brand has improved in-state and out-of-state. We now receive more out-of-state applicants to this university than we do within the state. Students who do not come to the University of Missouri from out-of-state go to Illinois, in order. I believe Mike, correct me if I say this wrong, but it's Illinois, Iowa, Indiana, Kansas, Arkansas. Those are the other major research one, AAU universities, except in the case maybe of Arkansas in this case. That's where the students go who don't come to the MU. So we're getting a very high quality of student based on what they see as tremendous quality here at this university. Earlier today, also, one other thing on the budget. The Board of Curators have also maintained in the budget a salary increase. And I believe that's, at this point, it's debated between, actually, Mike, that's not been finalized, I guess, has it? No, we've talked about 2%, 3%. And the board, that's a decision the board has to actually make later on. So let me not, I'll say that's still in the discussion, as you're aware from earlier discussions we've had. So we are spending most of our time dealing with the budget issues one way or the other and trying to come to terms, trying to maintain quality. We've generated a lot of new revenue in distance education, and we put that into the budget as a cost savings method. We've trimmed back in some other areas. We're going to try to be strategic, following our strategic plan and our work with you and the faculty and staff of this university to ensure that we are moving ahead toward our highest priorities. And so that's the challenge we face. And I know that must sound like rhetoric. It even does to us as we say it. But by golly, we tackle it every year, and we end up making hard decisions, and we come out. So far, we feel pretty good about where we've come out, given the challenge that we faced. When I became chancellor, I know I told you in a campus-wide meeting that my highest priority, other than ensuring the quality of this university, was to try to get faculty salaries up and competitive with the AAU publics. We have failed to accomplish that, given all that's occurred. We continue to press with our Board of Curators to achieve that, and we had the support certainly this year to keep that in the plan. So that's where we are at this time on budget. With regard to capital, as you know, the state has not come forward with capital 2001, perhaps, was the last time we had any capital from this money from the state. We are pushing an assessment by the legislature, pushing a position. In fact, Mike Middleton testified last week on this before the legislature, to try to ask the legislature to match us on a 50-50 basis. If we can get 50% of the money from private sources, the state would step in and provide the other 50%. Mike, that's the basic essence of that bill, as I understand it.
They put money into a fund, and as universities brought proposals with money in hand, private money in hand, they would match it with
Okay. That's, to those of you that have been around here very long, that sounds high. It does, but when you realize you're getting nothing from the state, we said, well, if we can find a way to even get half, then on major money gifts, we will do that. Let me say, as you are all aware, we're planning for another major fundraising campaign after completing our $1 billion campaign. We're engaged in planning for a $1 billion-plus campaign, and that is right now looking good. And this past month, or actually this month of February, we've had quite a bit of success in fundraising. All that's not been announced. But let me just say, it's going well. We're happy about the responses we're getting from a lot of donors. There are many donors very concerned that the state has to do its part in order for them to put up their money. So we're watching that and hoping that that will work out, and we'll try to be the messengers here as much as we can as we push to obtain more public funding. One other issue, and then I'll stop, Harry, for any questions or discussion. An issue that we're talking about in Chancellor's staff and have been now for the last month or so, and I know that Provost Foster is engaged in some discussions now with groups around the university, has to do with trying to find ways to reduce student alcohol consumption. And there's a lot of evidence, and Phil Wood in our psychology department has been a key informant for us, and he keeps sending me the right kind of research, shows that if you strengthen the number of classes on Friday, it has a decided impact on reduced alcohol consumption. So that's a mechanical, structural kind of thing that we can say, well, that doesn't get to the heart of the issue. Let's face it, listen, if you can reduce alcohol consumption and save a few lives and accidents that occur inevitably during the year, it's worth doing. So I just want to appeal to you as faculty to take a hard look at your Friday classes. We need more classes on Friday. We need the students very busy on Friday. And I can assure you, it will save lives. It'll save a life, I would predict, a year, because we lose more than that in students every year due to alcohol abuse and wrecks that occur as a result of it. So it's not a frivolous matter. And, you know, Kim Dude has been such a wonderful pioneer in alcohol awareness education. If you haven't heard her, I would urge you to have her talk to you, because she's fantastic. And it's very meaningful. And we can do a lot to help our students, and we need to be about that task. One of the things she says is, please, to faculty, don't make jokes about alcohol in class. About, oh, well, you know, we know what you're doing last night. I mean, sort of the passive or casual acceptance of alcohol abuse. It's a serious illness in our society. It's very impairing of the human quality that we're trying to produce here. So I just want to urge you to give attention to that. We will be giving attention to it with you and bringing it back at some point, perhaps, for more concerted action. So with that, Harry, let me pause. I'm happy to interact with you in any way, and then get out of your way at the right time, too. But it's great to be here with you.
Why don't you sit down and make yourself comfortable, and if anybody has any questions, can we open pretty much any topics to what you want?
Anything. And we'll hold short of great predictions Saturday, but we would like to see ourselves redeemed in Lawrence for a couple of nights ago. For a basketball team. Yes?
Could I ask I wasn't prepared for your point on alcoholism and alcohol consumption.
Right.
So how does that match up with what I'm reading in the Tribune in Missouri about this Tiger Town thing that they want to set up for the football games? It's sort of like a party zone that the university wants to set up for, in conjunction with the community, to close off streets, to let people have a good time, and I assume alcohol will be part of that. How does that, with athletics and the community and what you're mentioning about
Yeah, I don't think there's any contradiction there at all. The Tigertown thing is something that athletically, from a spirit standpoint, it's like having, you know, your big, a big party, a big, a cheering occasion to support the troops, to support our team. So that's going to occur, and hopefully that won't generate any more alcohol consumption that is consumed otherwise on weekends here.
It's would it more be alcohol-free? Pardon? Would it be alcohol-free?
I don't think so. I think the alcohol is probably not addressed in there. Someone else would. I don't know the details.
Sure.
No, I don't think it relates to the level of alcohol consumption, though. It's trying to organize so we can present as strong an image, I think, in our move to the SEC as possible.
Yeah. I don't know if you. I've had occasion to be in Lincoln for football games, and the entire downtown area is essentially everyone on the sidewalks, everybody eating in all the restaurants. Eating on the sidewalks, it's all red. It's very festive, and if you're in black and gold, you really stand out. So, if we could do something similar to that, it would mean a lot.
It's more of a
alcohol independent.
Yeah, more of a grand pep rally game day situation. In fact, I don't know if we ever knew. I don't think there's any more alcohol. Maybe it seemed like I heard there was less alcohol consumed on game day when we had the football group. It just doesn't relate to that really, you know, in any direct way. I appreciate the question.
I have a general question about the budget. It really is very general. Tim Mooney's excellent presentation gave me a very good sense about what next year is going to be like, whether we can manage to stay within the budget and the rest. I think that's extremely useful. I've been here 11 years now. It seems like we're always having some crisis or another. It's worse now, I understand.
Right.
But legislative funding is per capita students goes down. My question is twofold. What's your sense of how seriously being underfunded over 10 years has been? And related, if current trends go for another 10 years, where is this university? Doing just fine? Are we in big trouble? If things kind of go by year, do we end up in a good place or not so much?
Well, let me know. Very good question. And the difference in where we ought to be over the past 10 years is very serious. There's no question. Now, what we've had to do is go up somewhat higher in tuition. Even then, we've really not gone up as high as our competition has, competition among other states. They've all gone up at higher rates of tuition than has Missouri. So, we've been hurt significantly. Now you say, where do you see that hurt? Our salaries are the lowest among the AAU publics. That's very real. Our maintenance and repair is at now $500 million, our deferred maintenance. And we have fewer faculty in the classroom than we should have. Our student-faculty ratio has increased. We've employed technology. But we're very, very concerned. And recent accreditation studies have pointed directly at that to us, and that's got to be taken into consideration and very carefully considered. So are we worse off? Without question. We know right exactly where the effects of it are. Due to your good work and the work of the staff here who are absolutely killing themselves, and I never fail to point this out, and you can look at the record and show it, the number of patents has grown by sixfold in the last 3 years compared to the previous 3 years before that. So you, the faculty of this university, are absolutely killing themselves getting the job done in just a wonderful way. But it's tight. Every external team now is looking at it and saying, you just can't go on this way. It's just too much. We've employed technology. We've employed a lot of part-time and adjunct faculty. And we've done that under your guidance, basically. And we don't impose that. That's something the faculty decide at the department, at dean's level. And when that becomes out of kilt, it's going to change. And we've made that commitment all along. So what we are trying to do right now, and my strong appeal to Tim Wolfe, and I've had a conversation almost daily now for the last several days, is we desperately need more faculty. And the data shows it clearly. I will argue strongly for it. And I'm talking about tenure-track faculty. And we will work with you and your chairs and deans to address the needs. We still have some areas where we can adjust. And, you know, we did that by growing the upper level of courses, upper division courses, so that we drew on the strength of faculty where we had some teaching capacity in the last several years. So with your cooperation, we found, I think, some ingenious ways of addressing the issue and maintaining quality. But when I look ahead 10 years, and I very deliberately, I look for some change in the state's position in terms of funding us so that we can get the faculty numbers we need. I look for another $1 billion-plus campaign to have more endowed professorships and chairs to enable us to work on that salary dimension. We're working with a donor right now in one of the major departments of this university that says, I want to make this one of the best departments in the nation. And so we will work, we will provide the funds to increase the salaries, to increase the numbers up to target levels. I'm trying to identify 10, and I'm being a bit facetious here, but I've told our staff, I said, all we need is about 10 or 20 of those kind of donors, and we'll transform the university. So when I look ahead 10 years, I'm looking for a model that, again, will continue down the road of looking a bit more like a private university model with regard to the funding base. I don't think there's any way around that. We're making an all-out effort to increase the patents and the commercialization. At the same time that we're strengthening, and Mike Middleton's the lead on our conflict of interest issues, we will not tolerate any conflict of interest situations, that they have to be managed effectively. And we know that commercialization always runs those risks. Those are issues we're working with on an ongoing daily basis. So it's sort of all guns on board to charge toward this. It's been part of our strategic plan for more than 5 years to reform the fundamental financial basis of the university, and we've made tremendous strides in that direction. But still suffering at the cost that we talked about a moment ago. And we hope we can get over those with a lot more private funding and a lot more research and partnerships that bring in more revenue to the university, more incentive systems that we've worked at from time to time. You know, frankly, let's face it, if we could develop a new RADL every few years and sell it and get it spun off, anyone here from VetMed will attest to the volume of money that has suddenly gone into that college thanks to, wonderful work over the years, not with a lot of bruises some of us around the table had. It's Leona, you're there, you can attest to it. But I mean, honestly, that is an example. Suddenly we had new endowed chairs, we had positions filled, we had new infrastructure. That's the way it ought to be, and more new jobs created as a result of it. RADL's still here doing its thing, and you've got all that money now doing its thing academically and more research growth. So it's a wonderful story. So boy, let's try to get two or three of those in each of our colleges. I know that's a bit of a pipe dream. But yes?
You mentioned the likelihood of layoffs. How are those decisions going to be made relative to who's going to be laid off?
Well, it'll be according to the priorities, strategic priorities, and we're certainly not at a point where we have any idea of where that is. I think as we went through it, we might have found one area we said, well, that'll probably mean the loss of that position. But for the most part, it'll be in really the lower priority areas. And as we continue to grow in students, we continue to grow in research, and frankly, we continue to grow with our extension mission and soft-funded, externally funded. So that often generates, and I know in my discussions with Janice, I've continually said, of course that generates new jobs also. But that doesn't mean you're not losing jobs, though. And this is where, it's hard for the public to understand this point, I think. But it's true of the state. I said, surely you don't want to say the state's got these bad economic times, so therefore jobs in the state are going to fall. We hope they don't. We hope they grow, even with the tight times. The governor's having to lay off several, I forget the number, he's a large number from state government. Those people, we hope, don't leave the state. We hope the adjustment in the state's economy provides some cushion to keep them employed in another way. Here at this university, we have a very good record of providing counseling and training and phasing out in some areas, but you can't do it always. So I would never say there won't be some job losses. In fact, we know 50-some are going to disappear one way or the other, and 20-some of those, by the way, are tenure-track faculty positions.
Unfilled lines,
right, at this point. What we do with unfilled lines is we often are adding faculty where we have tremendous teaching loads, and we won't fill them in areas where there's not that load there that has to be met, or the research growth is not sufficient. If the research growth is there, that's new revenue then that can be stepped in. I mean, we understand that within the university. We're finding that it's hard for the public to understand that. Because they can think, well, if your budget's getting cut, why don't you just see people hitting the streets unemployed? Well, we're a pretty good-sized organization here, and it's much more complicated than that. And in the complication with the amount of turnover that we have, we deal with the issues with sensitive employers and department chairs and directors. So, yes?
You said that 50, but the newspaper says something like 250 positions.
Yeah. That's the system-wide figure. System-wide figure, yeah, exactly. And so for us, what we showed the board the other day, I believe it was 54, 57, and those were pretty carefully calculated, and it could be a little more, it could be a little less. And at this point, as I say, we expect those to be mostly open positions, but probably not all of them. And 2030, some of those were extension positions. 24 is that?
I think that's right.
Okay.
34, I believe.
Yeah. Right. Were extension positions. And how many of those are turnover? How much can they reassign? You know, often they reassign people across the state. So they're very disruptive. And anytime you're doing this, some people will leave rather than move also. So you get all that change occurring.
And you said like 20 tenure track positions.
I'm sorry?
You said like about 20.
20, right.
Okay.
Right.
That includes some of those were extension, right?
No. That I'm not 100% clear on. There are some extension positions that are tenure track. But that would be the small number, really, of those. Yes, Tom?
I hate to be so negative, but it seems to me, I understand, my perception is that education part of the university doesn't pay for itself, tuition and fees and things like that. And then research, I've heard, including the F&A overhead and all that, that doesn't cover the expenses for the research, even though tuition and those educational costs to students are going up and research funding is increasing. So if these assumptions or perceptions are true, how could the university survive financially, mm-hmm. without some kind of sustainability plan?
Right.
And because what I hear is, well, we got this fire here, put that one out. We got this fire there, we put that one out there. And there's no plan.
No, quite the contrary, Tom. What I'm saying is there is a plan. It's our strategic plan that we've developed. That's what guides us in that process of where resources are allocated, always. And it's true that research does not, in a sense, pay for itself for the most part. And we have negotiated indirect, which is below the actual cost. We negotiate that, the federal government. And then the average that is paid in indirect is well below the negotiated rate. So you say, well, what makes that up? Well, that's where the state money comes in. And so some of the tuition fees, for that matter.
Providing money never has.
Pardon?
Never has provided very much money.
So right, no, no.
30 years that I've been here.
But we still, we're
saying the state, Missouri's 50th is providing support for the university, so it's not going to.
So that's hampered us, whatever it is. And I'm afraid to even say the figure because we toss so many around. But if you count everything, somewhere below $200 million, in other words. Depends on whether we're counting all the hospital, the indigent care, and so forth. So it's that money from the state that is helping finance these students that come here. They don't pay for themselves totally at all. The research doesn't totally pay. The state's got to be there to support a flagship major research land-grant university. In fact, the whole concept of the 1862 Morrill Act, by the way, which we're celebrating the 150th anniversary of this year, was the federal government will match the state one-to-one, and then on extension and on its agricultural research and some of the engineering research. Well, we're doing that, so that money comes in too, see, to help here. But yeah, we're below what a lot of our peers are doing, and that's where we're hamstrung, and it's why our salaries are lower, our deferred maintenance is greater, and so forth. But I mean, we're aware of those pressures, and we're trying to follow the strategic plan. The reductions are going to be where the strategic priorities are the lowest. I mean, really beyond saying that.
Maybe that's the longer range. I don't know your business, but a five-year strategic plan, we're in the third year of it or something like that. So what are we going to do for the next 10 years that you point out? What's going to happen with 20 years? The state of Missouri is going to be around, but maybe the university is going to be not the same university.
Well, for Leona, you've been there for many of these. How many years has it been? We recognized that many years ago in our strategic planning process. SPRAC took it on, and they said, let's reshape the entire financial basis of the university. We have done that. We now get $40-some million annually from our endowments to help us out. We want to double that in the next campaign. We have a lot more endowed professorships than chairs. We do very well in some areas, like the College of Business, where most of the full professors there are endowed professorships or named professorships. We would like to see that across this entire university. That's changing the business model. We try to negotiate indirect cost rates up, and we have ongoing strategies here. We are still providing significant amounts of financial aid, both in merit and need, and over $100 million a year out of our budget. So clearly, in many states, the state does that, not the university. If we can get our state to do that, that will relieve us of part of the burden. Or if we can get private giving to step up and increase the amount of endowed scholarships, that relieves us of that. And Tom, that's part of our strategic assessment as we take these steps and engage in our development campaign planning, which we're very much into right now. But it's a thorny issue. It's very flopping around because we can get surprised by gifts. We get surprised by what the state does. And we hold out eternal hope, being the optimist that we are, that the state may step in and really turn things around at some point. So we still hope for that. But if we don't, we're going to be dead set on having a model that keeps this university one of the greatest universities in the country. And I could talk all day. We had a ceremony this morning at two new entrepreneurship awards based on their absolutely cutting-edge research coming out of this university by Fred Hawthorne on the one case and a group in business with our biomedical, what's it called? The bio lab in engineering and medicine with business. We have a lab that was second in the nation after Stanford. I'm sorry, I'm missing the word here. Pardon? No. We have a laboratory. After Stanford did a model, we picked it up. It involves someone in the College of Medicine in surgery, someone in engineering, and someone in business. They work as a team for a year. We have funding for this. They come up with new products, and they create those products and commercialize them.
It's a biodesign lab.
It sits over in the College of Engineering, and I've been steering people to you. I told Jim Thompson to expect a crowd. People ought to go see what that lab is doing. It is really exciting, and it's cutting edge from a national standpoint. And the Kauffman Foundation recently gave us a major entrepreneurial grant to support this broad range of efforts in entrepreneurship, and they did that among three universities in the nation. They said, what are the top three universities in the nation? Well, guess what they were? Carnegie Mellon, University of North Carolina, and the University of Missouri, Columbia. So that's the quality that the faculty continue to deliver in spite of all these ups and downs and frustrations we have. And I applaud you for that because it's what keeps me going. And it keeps our students going. If you talk to our students about how excited they are about the learning environment here, it's these kinds of things that are just phenomenal.
So, well, I applaud you for coming and stepping in and generating these off-the-cuff remarks. Thank you so much. We're sorry that the president couldn't be here, and I'm sure he has a very wonderful reason. But thank you so much for coming, and we appreciate it. So we'll look forward to seeing you perhaps next time.
Thanks.
Great. Thank you very much. Thanks.